Hey y'all, it's Kelsey. It's here. We've made it to episode 10, the last episode of season 1 of Cool Queers Doing Cool Shit. These episodes have been a testament to the real, raw, glorious care that queer people provide for their loved ones, for their community, and for themselves. It's been the most joyful ride to share these conversations with you, and I hope it's just the first of many seasons to come. This week, as I've watched the Perseid meteor shower and hiked across freshly charred wildfire paths and talked to my family about how to prepare for a hurricane earthquake and hoped for the people of Lahaina as they figure out what home means and sat in my home as I watched the heat index climb outside to feels like 121, I've been achy. Aching for the earth, aching for what we're all navigating. A future that looks a little different than maybe the one we dreamed up, or maybe just a longer timeline to make those dreams happen. I'm thinking about the earth and our world and our hopes as I offer you this last episode. The script was flipped, and this week I was the queer guest. So I guess I should share a little bit about me. I'm Kelsey Renee Rhodes. I use she/her pronouns. I was born and raised in San Diego, California, where I learned how much I love to write and how much I love to dance and how much I love an ocean. Then I went and studied public policy at the University of Michigan, where I fell in love with story. I met so many people and built such a rich community, and I met the man who became my best friend, who I then married. We moved to Connecticut and then back to San Diego. We got a dog. We got a house. I learned what it was like to live with some pretty challenging mental health issues. And then COVID hit. I was diagnosed with my first of a few autoimmune disorders. I sat with a lot of myself and what had led me to this point. I sat with my identities and my questions. And it brought me to the realization that I wouldn't be able to stay married and believe that he and I could both have the fulfillment that we deserved. So we got divorced. I moved to Kansas City and I started this chapter that I'm at right now, reckoning with and getting right with myself around queerness, around sobriety. And I started this chapter with Iman. I've become all the more grounded in my work supporting abortion access. I got sick again and I had some surgeries. I built this really robust queer family, and that's what led me here to this, to y'all. I don't know if that's what's meant to be shared in a bio, but it feels right to finally introduce myself as wholly as I can in this podcast intro. All right, let's dig in. All right. Hi, everybody. We have a little bit.
Okay. No, I'm the host.
Okay, you go. You be the host.
Okay. Hello, everybody. It's Iman, Kelsey's partner. Today we are doing a little switcheroo. It is the end of the first season of Cool Queers Doing Cool Shit, and it was a very successful season, in my opinion. And today I'm going to be interviewing Kelsey about the cool things that she's doing as a cool queer doing cool shit. Welcome to the program, Kelsey.
Thanks so much for doing my job today, Iman.
It's harder than you make it look.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been a learning journey for sure, but it's fun to be on the other side.
Okay, great. See, I'm so awkward. I'm like, okay, great. Now.
You're doing great.
Okay, well, you had some demands about what I should ask you, and
that's right.
You sent me a question that you are starting every episode with. And so I will also be starting this episode with this question. Just kidding. I'm going to go off script. No, I'm just kidding about that. I'm going to start with this question. So queer is not just an adjective or a noun. Queer is also a verb. So our listeners are wondering, since you've been asking people this all season, what are you queering in your life right now?
Well, thank you for starting with this question. I am someone who appreciates patterns, so this just works. But I feel like I'm queering making right now, and this project, this podcast, is an element of that. This year, I really felt like I wanted to lean into creation, and I don't mean that in the biblical sense. But
Okay, God. Damn. Go, God, go.
Oh shoot, that's funny. I really wanted to find a venue for writing, for storytelling, for connecting with people. And I definitely had some imposter syndrome in the beginning of if I'm someone who has the experience or the tools or the wherewithal to publish stuff and put stuff out in the world that's publicly available. And it took a lot of just kind of putting my ego aside and saying, fuck it, I'm gonna try something new. And in the spirit of trying something new, having very wonderful, queer, intimate, tender conversations with people. And it's those conversations that really inspired me to put this project together, to put my Substack together, to really try and start this journey of getting a book published, which has been another thing that I feel like I've been querying in terms of trying to just break down a lot of the gatekeeping and lack of transparency that exists in that process. So, that's what I feel like I'm querying right now. I'm trying to just remember that we all can feel closer and a little bit less alone if we are honest and real about what we're going through, and sharing writing and sharing these conversations is one way that we can feel a little closer together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It is definitely being a queer has definitely helped me feel less alone in the world, and then finding other queers that are my queer brethren. So I totally get that. And like, you're so good at the internet, unlike, some people we know. So it's me, everyone. So you have really found a way to use social media and, your craft and what you've been creating for, like about, the past year, to reach out to people. And what have people's responses been?
Something I've learned through choosing to be transparent, which is such a risk, right? About my divorce, about my coming out, about my diabetes diagnosis, about what life has been the last few years, like kind of that raw oversharing, which is very core to who I am. I feel
I'm
like
like,
I've
that's
been able
private.
to, what'd you say?
And I'm like, that's private.
Yeah, newsflash to listeners. There's a big rift in me and Iman's relationship about what's considered private and what's not. Yeah, so in the practice of putting myself out there, of course, there's a huge risk, right? It could be deemed as sharing too much, as something that's maybe quote unquote unprofessional by the like white cis het world of work, right? Like employers maybe don't want to hear about how chronically ill I am or about how gay I am. But I think that this is beyond capitalism. This is a tool to be able to, again, like weave some threads of deeper connection. And that's how I've been received. And so that's how I know that this is something that is a project that I want to continue building and evolving, because the people that I've heard from who have had similar experiences as I have through maybe sobriety, for example, has been really, really validating in terms of remembering why it is that I don't know. There's like I'm going back to this religious stuff, but like people in church, I feel like there's like this testifying model. I guess also in Congress, right? Like when you testify, you're deemed an expert of your lived experience. And I think that there's power in sharing our own testimonials about what life has been like, because so often we're told that we're not supposed to feel a certain way. We're supposed to feel ashamed. We're supposed to feel alone. We're supposed to feel small. And those are all of the systems that, are oppressive systems in our country. That's what they're designed to make us feel. And so if we break through those a little bit and make folks see that we're much more connected than we ever realized, then that's when we can start building communities that are going to show up for each other more authentically and not be as dependent on these oppressive models.
I love that.
Thank you.
That's beautiful, baby.
My relationship with alcohol, because I mean, I think anyone who's had an issue with a substance agrees that, of course, there's this core element of addiction that we're talking about that's medical. And then there's also some psychosomatic, psychosocial underpinnings to all of this, right? Like, what leads people to feeling like they need to numb themselves with a substance to begin with? Or what, for me, like, I had a lot of insecure narratives that fueled my drinking. So, wanting to feel interesting, wanting to feel fun, wanting to feel connected. And those were all stories that I was telling myself about me. And so it was a long journey once I stopped drinking of getting right with myself, of remembering who I am, of in some instances, like really getting to know myself for the first time. And that's weird at 31 years old.
It's so funny because like I see you sober I mean not since you've been sober but just since I've met you as like a very interesting, very fun and very much able to like make connections with people like in a way that I think is really remarkable. And so it's so wild like oh and this we're all sort of party to this, right? Like ourselves one way and like literally the rest of the world could be seeing us in a way that like we want to be seen already,
Yeah, we're so good at telling
and
ourselves lies about ourselves.
I know it's like just so interesting to me because like you I like other people definitely feel this way about you too. It's not just like I'm in love with you and so I think you're the best person on earth. Like I think many people are, people always say to me like Kelsey is so warm, she's so welcoming, she's so kind and friendly. Like I do think that you just make these like instant connections with people and like, people really like you. This has become just like a self, like I'm just like Kelsey's amazing, y'all. it's true. And I think that you have the ease and ability to, like make connections with people. So it's just so interesting to me. And I think you're so right. Like we just tell ourselves these narratives about ourselves that just aren't true and like might be exactly the opposite,
Yeah, totally. Because when I would drink more and I would drink too much, I absolutely would become a version of myself that wasn't achieving those goals of being more fun or being more connected. I would say stuff that I didn't mean or that I wouldn't remember. And that's not good for anybody. Like, I want to be someone who lives in the moment. And a part of that is remembering the moment and being present enough to act consciously. And I was losing my grip on my ability to act consciously in a lot of situations. And that lack of control is scary. So regaining that control has been awesome and beautiful and has helped me see new parts of living that I hadn't been able to grab onto in a really long time. And because of how centric alcohol is in the way that we relate to each other, and how we've talked about at work, not only socially, right, but like in these professional settings where there's an open bar at the conference, there's a happy hour to connect with your colleagues. There have been moments where it's felt really isolating because I am at battle in my head with my own demons about wanting to drink. And so instead of being able to be present in the space that I'm at, I'm having a lot of internal dialogue about like dealing with cravings, what it feels like to want something really badly, but not being able to have it, knowing that that's the right decision for me, but not being able to articulate why in a way that feels satisfying to people around me, right? Like, of course, people want to know why someone isn't drinking. And that's a lot to live through telling that story over and over and over again. And so, having friends here in Kansas City and this queer chosen family that we've built that were already on their own journey with reflecting on their relationship to substances has been really important for me because even though in the outside world of like at work or when we travel, I felt a lot of pressure, I knew that coming home and being with our community here was always going to be a safe place to land.
Yeah, that's really true. And it's so, I mean, just the contradiction in all of it is like you mentioned, happy hours at conferences to like connect with people and your colleagues and things like that. And it's just
Yeah.
like alcohol is both this thing that brings people together and it's a thing that tears people apart. And I think that's, true of a lot of like quote unquote vices.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know. It's just like really, I don't know. It's kind of just an interesting concept of like there are things that when done in moderation, like yeah, maybe bring people together, but also like people should just be able to like talk to each other. But there's like so much anxiety in our world because of, white supremacy and capitalism and just everything that we need some sort of like, social lubricant. And that often is in the form of alcohol. So I can imagine that it's very difficult for you to kind of exist in that world where, like, that is just like alcohol is copious, it's readily available, and it's like often encouraged. Like you
Yeah.
mentioned, people want to know why you're not drinking. It's like, it's almost like if you go to someone's house and like don't eat their food, like they're like, what? It's like insulting almost, which is, it shouldn't really be like that. Like, it's like, I'm just not drinking. Like, it's allowed. I'm not pregnant.
I think that that conversation that always happens of the like, do you want to drink? No. Why not? I don't drink.
Right,
Why don't
right.
you drink?
Why?
Like,
Why are you asking why not?
that conversation. So there's of course the like discomfort of someone acting differently than you expect, right? Like people expect to go into situations where there's alcohol and everyone participates. It's really easy. We're just gonna let loose. And then all of a sudden there's this me who's like a big old spike in the plan, right? Like, oh no, you're disrupting the flow of how this moment was going to go. And why it's uncomfortable for people is because for a millisecond, it forces people to ask themselves, why am I drinking? And that's also
Right.
uncomfortable.
Right. And I think it's an interesting thing that you're mentioning because like I think that I used to do that to you when you were drinking. Like when we were at home and you were like, "Hey, do you want a cocktail?" And I'm like, "No, good. I'm just going to drink Topo Chico's because that's like my favorite drink in the whole world." And I think that kind of would, spark that in you. So I think that's very universal.
Yeah.
This like sort of like moment of like, but why am I drinking? And like, why
Right.
is this person not drinking? And like, they should be drinking with me. And the other thing is, like, our whole lives, like, as we grow up in this country, we associate like substance use with like having a good time. And you have mentioned like before, like, I don't know how it's hard for me to imagine having like as much fun as I used to or something like that without alcohol. And that's because like that's just how we're trained, right? Like,
Yeah.
every I feel like it's so common to just like start drinking when you're a teenager, and it's like always like bad and a little bit sexy and like a little bit illegal and a little bit fun because of all that. And then it's like any party you go to when you're a kid, there's alcohol and that's like the thing to do. And so this culture is just like kind of it's like ingrained in our society, which it makes it makes a lot of adults that have like, some deep thinking to do about their drinking. So I think I don't want to comment on like your relationship with alcohol, but like also the environment that we were raised in and live in this country is not conducive to like anyone developing like a healthy relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. And I've been thinking, as I get more space from alcohol, so I just got the notification on my phone that yesterday was 14 months sober, which is cool to just keep hitting these milestones of
Wow,
like,
congratulations.
thank you. But it's cool that it's like, this is the most sober I've ever been every day, And
Yeah.
I was thinking about even as we so Iman and I are planning an upcoming trip in the fall, and a lot of the selling points at some of the places that we'll be visiting is about alcohol, right? Like either things being included in the
Right.
package, or when you read reviews, people talk about how great the cocktails are. And it's
Right.
also led me to thinking about just how tied substance use is with supporting capitalism, right? Like my
I'm
own
glad you brought up capitalism.
normalization, yeah, my own normalization of capitalism in my head as a system that I grew up in and was taught was right and good. I when we like went to an all-inclusive resort with my family over the holidays, my very first thought was, oh my God, I'm not going to be getting our money's worth, right? Like, what the fuck does that even mean? Like
Right.
the fact
You're
that
like, it's
that's
like, first of all, you didn't pay for it, so it
right,
doesn't matter.
but that's how deeply ingrained these, like, once again, these narratives that are lies about what's important, what we're supposed to be prioritizing. And thank goodness I'm at a place in my life I am now where I was able to see just how ridiculous that was and reprioritize the fact that, oh, this is about connecting with family. This is about unplugging from the grind. This is about, relaxation and restoration and
Yeah.
not about quote unquote value, whatever that
Yeah,
means.
yeah.
So.
We're not good, like you and me and your sister, like we're not good all-inclusive material, and like we're also not really good buffet material, as disappointing as that is to perhaps family. I would like to take this capitalist bridge to the land, the ever fertile land of white supremacy.
Hey.
So in your work and in your life, you are a white person, a spoiler alert for everyone who didn't know.
It's true.
And so you, in your work and in your life as a white person, have really focused on giving a voice to perhaps previously voiceless people, in the form of talking point writing, speech writing, things like that, or just making it possible and easier for people who, don't have, formal media training, to get formal media training through you, and also to elevate the narrative of abortion bans are a part of white supremacy. They are a part of capitalism. And I think in this podcast as well, you have really focused on trying to elevate the voices of not only queer people, but queer people of color, and queer people from different, socioeconomic backgrounds and things like that. And so I am wondering, like, how, because whiteness is so problematic in our society, right? And it's so easy to just be a white person and not really evaluate your role in the problematic nature of whiteness and white supremacy. And I think that you, as a white person, have done a remarkable job of sort of really realizing terms with your own whiteness, and then also working to elevate non-white people in a lot of different fashions and ways. And so how did you, like, I guess I'm just wondering, like, for the parents of white children out there, like, how did you become this person that is like so racially aware as someone who had the opportunity to be so racially unaware rather blissfully? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm just thinking for a second.
Like, give us some parenting advice or something.
I don't think I have parenting advice. The journey of analyzing my whiteness has been one of regular interrogation and one that I know is never going to be over. And that's the most important part, right? We see people fall prey to this, like, oh, well, I'm a good white person narrative. And it ends up
Yeah.
all white people have become normalized within this power structure of white supremacy. And as a result, there is no such thing as a quote unquote good white person, right? All white people bear white privilege because of white supremacy. And it takes analyzing that, seeing where that shows up, and constantly taking a step back to take a more 30,000 foot view at the ways that we are even unconsciously moving through and furthering white supremacy. And so, I mean, I guess my only tip is be aware of it every day. Ask yourself a lot of questions of how it's showing up. In terms of how I move through the world, you're right that I've, especially the last few years in my work and in my life, been making a really concerted effort to learn from people's whose lived experiences have been different than mine, and because they've been different than mine, have taught me a lot about the failures of our society, right? Like, I've only just recently in the last few years come up against systemic failures for disabled people, chronically ill people, queer people. Like, this is a new journey for me as an individual. This is ancestral for so many people that I have been in conversation with through this podcast, through my work. And those ancestral stories and the stories of today of how that's still showing up are so deserving of being centered and of being heard. And I don't really see another way, right? Like, we grew up in an education system where we were fed the white narratives on a spoon. We
Oh, for sure.
heard the colonizer narratives. We heard the white savior narratives. And that is what led us intentionally to the moment that we're at today, where our systems are cracking and people are not getting what they need to survive. Our earth is not getting what it needs to survive. And so we have to try a new way. And I have learned from so many organizers of color, queer people, trans people, Black leadership in our movement and abortion access, that we have to decenter this colonizer narrative. And I hope that we all can do a better job of seeing that, right? And like, in terms of looking at where like the norms of white supremacy still show up in me and in my life, I think I absolutely still value inappropriately like timeliness, right? Like the there's
Is
this
like a huge contentious issue in our relationship.
yeah, exactly. There's
I'm like, oh, we should have been there 10 minutes ago. Time for me to get ready.
yeah. And I'm like biting the inside of my cheek trying to not
You're
say
like
anything.
gone. You like left me at the house.
And that goes back to, and I try to think about like, what does that mean that urgency and timeliness is a part of a white supremacy model? Like, it pushes expectations of when we're supposed to be doing something, why and how we're supposed to be doing something on people, as opposed to allowing moments of connection to readily happen when we're able to be present in those moments, right? Like, how do we disconnect timeliness from respect? Like, where's the line there, you know?
I
And
needed to finish that episode of British Baking Show Juniors before I was ready to do socializing. You know
yeah,
what
exactly.
I mean?
And so that's like a conversation that I'm always having with myself. Look at the ways that we are reaping the benefits of an abusive system.
Really great points. I think, the white people have gotten away with for so long, like they can say like I'm not a racist and then say
Right.
whatever they want and
Right.
everyone's like, yeah, you're not a racist, you're right, you're just making this joke because you said you're not a racist, we believe you. But then like a Black person says something and everyone's like, we don't believe you at all, like it's like
Yeah.
the amount of belief in what people are saying in our society, like whiteness is so valued that like white people can literally just like they can say one thing and then say another thing, and if they're totally opposites, it like doesn't matter. So I think like that's just one tiny example, but there's been a lot of resting on the laurels of like this is how I am and this is how I view myself external world, but then like actions speak totally differently. Like I'm not a racist, but like I did vote for Trump. It's like okay, well then you're a fucking racist,
Yeah.
okay?
I guess, wait, when you said that, it made me think of, I mean, these are not parenting tips in terms of like, I know I'm going to be a good parent, because
Yeah.
I think everyone is going to make mistakes when it comes to parenting if they choose to do that in their lives. But as I've tried to kind of, I know this is like a hashtag therapy language thing, but like reparent myself and show up for myself in ways that I know I need to show up for my inner child. The first is about, in terms of decentering whiteness and decentering oneself, knowing that I will never ever be someone who knows the most about something in the room. And kind of operating under that lens that I will always have something important and probably life-changing to learn from the people around me, especially people who hold different identities than I do. And so operating with that kind of curiosity, I think, is really important, because any kind of supremacist thinking relies on someone believing that they are the best, the most, the only. And so I know that I am not that. And yet our education systems forever tell us that that should is what we should be reaching for and attaining for, right? Like the top, the number one, the gold medal, like the 4.0, like you want to be perfect, quote unquote, whatever that means. And so operating with a sense of like humbleness, I guess, of I always am going to have something to learn from people around me.
Humility.
Yeah, humility. Thank you. No matter how old or young they are, no matter what their background is, right? Like that genuine, authentic place of, holy shit, you're amazing. I'd love to hear your tales, you know? Like
Yeah.
entering conversations with that in mind. And then the other thing that I was thinking about when you mentioned Trump, bleh, is action, right? Like it's so
Yeah.
easy to fall into the comfort of inaction of, oh, someone else will do that. Someone else will take care of that.
Yeah, just
Someone
like
else.
social bystander effect, sort of.
Exactly. And so, I am really dedicated to, no matter where I'm living, right? I was in San Diego before, now we're living here in Kansas City, looking to the leadership of organizers of color who are doing grassroots work in community. Folks of color are leading this work everywhere. And so, like, really listening to the demands and the actions that are being requested of these groups that are, representing the needs of communities and not just individuals or corporations. And showing up, like, actually showing up with your body to things. Folks who are white, like, white privilege is a real thing, white safety is a real thing. And if we're able to use our bodies to show up at protests, to perhaps just put a little bit more space between cops who are interested in harming and killing and abusing Black bodies, and our community members who are at risk and are experiencing those harms and that violence every day, like that's just one thing we can be doing, you know? So like really speaking with our bodies as much as we can, and really not falling prey to this narrative that it's all going to be okay. Someone else will deal with it. Like we are the someone else.
That's a great bookend to that conversation. Okay, maybe put the little music here then, and then we'll just do a different type of questioning. Are you ready? Do
Yeah.
the like little nice music in the edit, you know what I
Do
mean?
do
Like
do
do
do.
do 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 do. Yeah. Or you could just have that, you doing it. Okay, this is a rapid fire round
I'm
of
ready.
questioning. Are you ready? Pepsi or Coke?
Coke.
White chocolate, milk chocolate, or dark chocolate?
Milk chocolate.
Cheetos Puffs or Cheetos Crunchy?
Crunchy.
What? Okay, never mind. It's your episode. Flaming Hot Cheetos or Takis Fuego?
Flaming Hot Cheetos. And that is the Cheeto that I was thinking of.
Hey, but that's not what I asked you. So do you want to change your answer or are you sticking with crunchy?
So these are just plain
Don't
cheese
change it. I'm
Cheetos.
peer pressuring you. I'm just peer pressuring you. Okay. Original Doritos or Cool?
Original Doritos.
Wow, that is bold. You're gonna get a lot of comments on that, I bet. I said the next line I wrote is just Cheez-Its. There's no or.
Wait, do you remember when you were growing up, did you have kids in your class who would eat cheese nips?
I mean, I know what a cheese nip is,
They
but
were
like
disgusting.
nobody was eating that. Yeah, that was like trash. It's like cardboard.
It was so sad when
Also, you
someone
need to
thought
spoon
that they were
butter cheese
getting,
nips, people.
yeah, it was so sad when people thought they were getting Cheez-Its in their lunch and then they actually had cheese nips. And then it was just like this sad, limp baggie sitting in the middle of the
Yeah.
lunch table. Like, someone take my cheese nips. And then maybe a bird would get brave. But like, that was it.
Oh yeah, because you lived in San Diego, you were eating lunch outside. I'm like, why are you outside? It's freezing here. But that's like hashtag Chicago. Inside lunch only in Chicago school year. Fly a kite or have a picnic.
Picnic.
What is your favorite color?
Well, this is so hard all the time because I feel like it's changing. Yellow.
Now, what is your favorite color? Okay. What is your favorite gluten-free food?
Passion fruit.
What is your favorite non-gluten-free food? Like from before, like when you ate gluten, like from your memory.
Bean and cheese burrito.
Mint chip ice cream or cookie dough ice cream?
Okay, but I can only eat one of those, so I have to pick mint chip.
Just pretend the cookie dough is like gluten free.
And like actually good and not weird and grainy.
Sure.
Okay, fine,
In
then
this
cookie dough.
fantasy world you're creating, sure.
If it was real ass cookie dough and it was good, then I would pick cookie dough. But because for the most part, I'm picking mint chip because I don't want to get sick, then the mint chip. And I really do like that green mint chip.
I know everyone does. I just don't. I just don't. But that's fine. Cakes or cookies?
Cakes.
Jennifer Lawrence or Natalie Portman to marry?
Mary? Okay. I have to like talk this one out loud because Natalie Portman is, of course, gorgeous. I feel like I'd be afraid that I would break her because she's so bird-like.
She is really small. I saw her
So
personally.
you saw her in person? Damn. Because she's like short and tiny,
Yeah,
right? She's just like mini in
she's
all ways.
yes. She we were staring we were at the Tate Modern Museum in London and we were staring at the same enormous Matisse mural
But you were
or
like,
paper
oh,
mural,
who's this child
whatever.
next to me? And then it was Natalie Portman.
No, we were sort of on different sides of it and like we were both standing really close to it and like looking at it up close and then I was like, who is this other weirdo standing so close to this? And I like turned my head and she also turned her head and we like made eye contact and I was like, wow, this woman is really beautiful. And I like didn't know who she was. And then I looked at it a little bit more and then I walked away and I was like, that was Portman. And then I looked up her whereabouts because like creepy, you can look up where celebrities are like literally at all times. Talk about invasive. And she was in London, like filming something.
Wow, that's awesome. So, I mean, all of that to say, I think I picked Jennifer Lawrence. She seems funny and she's beautiful, and I feel like I wouldn't be worried about breaking her bones.
Or avian bone syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite season?
I really like summer.
Favorite holiday?
Favorite holiday? Think I'm a Christmas bitch.
Oh my God, really? But you've
I
so
mean,
quickly given up the idea of like having American Christmas.
oh well, I just don't think that was ever really a part of my growing up. Like when I think about Christmas, I think about my dad making us huevos rancheros for breakfast and how delicious that is. And like, that's the best, right? And I used to have, I mean, when I drank, I still could make a
Yeah.
virgin one, but like Bloody Marys. And just like, I mean, growing up in San Diego, we had the ultimate the ultimate privilege of most Christmas days was nice enough to eat breakfast outside in the sun. And like
That
that
is
was
so, I just cannot with this. Like, I'm just so,
so I really and I have
literally
like
never eaten one single morsel of food outside on Christmas in my whole life.
so I just feel really fond of those memories.
What was your favorite class in high school?
I took an amazing creative writing class one semester that I think really motivated me to turn to writing as a way to express myself.
Oh, I bet that teacher's really proud of you.
Yeah, Miss Chupo, let's go.
What was your favorite class in college?
Oh, I took, okay, this is kind of strange, but it's a class that has stuck with me a lot. I took a in the public policy school that I was a part of, I took a class where we studied quote unquote utopian societies, so aka cults.
Oh, yeah, you've told me that before.
So we basically studied cults all semester to look at what they were trying to achieve from a values perspective and then where they failed from a model perspective. And at the same time, like how we could kind of disconnect the failure of quote unquote utopian societies or dystopian societies, and look at from a policy perspective, what are things that we could learn in terms of what they were trying to accomplish? So even things breaking down to like city planning, so how a community is physically organized and where resources are placed compared to where dwellings are. And then we'd apply that to, you know, if we were going to create our own kind of utopian society from a policy perspective, how, like, what would we, how would we configure the city itself? And I found that to be really fascinating. And we also thought a lot about how climate change is impacting our ability to think about a future that's more utopian because of access to natural resources. So it was kind of applying today's challenges to yesterday's cults.
So would you say that you're pro cult? Kind of sounds like
I'm not
it.
pro cult. I enjoyed using cults as a model to ask
This
questions.
just became Fox News. Like, so you love cult?
I don't love cult.
Okay,
That's not
moving
what
on.
I
Next
say.
question. Skateboarding
I'm bad at both, so I'm just going to pick rollerblading because it sounds like I'll hurt myself less.
or rollerblading? Fishing or hunting?
Fishing, baby.
Name three positions in American football.
Okay, but I went to Michigan, so I think I'm going to know this one. We got the
Oh,
quarterback, we got
right.
the kicker, we got the wide
Okay.
receiver.
That was too easy for you. I forgot that you went to Michigan. Go Blue. Who was your favorite guest on season one?
This is a trick question because you were a guest on season one. No, I'm not going to pick favorites. I this is for real, honest me, not just trying to be nice to everybody. I learned so much with every conversation that I had in every episode. And there was always something, you know, I try to be prepared and like research the guest and ask thoughtful questions. And there would be something that would come up in every episode that would knock me on my ass in terms of like, oh my God, I never thought this conversation would go here. And I'm so glad that it did. And so I'm just grateful for everyone being on that ride with me.
You literally fell right into my trap. I'm so good at question writing. So I thought as a close, we would go through each episode and you would just tell me kind of one of the key takeaways that you had from it. And then we'll finish with your takeaway that you want people to go home with at the end of the season from your own episode.
Oh, I
What
love
do you would
that.
be? Okay. So starting with, should I do them out of order to confuse you?
We can
I
just.
won't do that
Why does it need to be a test?
I love a game. You know me. Let's play a game. I'm
Okay.
like the guy in Saw.
Okay, we can play a game.
No, it's fine. Okay, episode one, queering climate justice. You talked to one of your old college colleagues. What did you take away from that? What do you want people to
Modalities of work and creativity to try and, for all intents and purposes, queer the solutions that we're making for climate change. But my biggest takeaway from this conversation was towards the end, we started talking a lot about certainty and feelings, and the fact that we have to be comfortable living in the gray and living in areas of our life where we actually don't have an answer, we don't know what's going to happen. And so that's something that I am still carrying with me from that episode.
nice. Okay, believe trans kids, episode two.
Yes. So this conversation with Dr. Devin Ojeda, we discussed so much of what's really failing trans youth in our country right now, both on an individual level and a systemic level. And I laughed so much with Devin in the beginning. I loved that he said that he was querying like bagel bites and talking about
Oh yeah,
his
I love that.
talking about his cats and I don't know. I just laughed a lot at the beginning of that episode, and I'm grateful for that because even in the midst of talking about hard things and big failures and big pain, we have to be able to laugh our way through things. And then I also really valued his sharing of his own personal story and our discussion around why it's so important to trust young people. And I've had conversations since that episode. I just had a conversation with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago who's really interested in youth organizing around even the fact that we have a word that is infantilized, right? Like the fact that we've deemed the idea
Yeah.
of being young as a bad thing. And why is that? And so, like,
Right.
really reinstoring and rethinking about the way that we're trusting young people.
It's because old people don't want to lose power.
Yeah.
So
It is all about power.
they're like, you're young. You don't, this is one that hits close to home for me. Episode three, Journey. I'm sorry. Journal of a Black Queer Nurse with our friend Brittany.
This was such a beautiful conversation. I also know that this conversation was influenced by the fact that I was able to read the advanced reader copy of her book right before this conversation. And so I just felt so moved and inspired by the fact that she had put pen to page and told her truth out loud. And it was so exciting to dig deeper into those conversations. And something that I'll take away from that conversation is just the genuine humanity with which Brittany approaches her interactions with everyone that she works with, especially people who she's providing care for, who, for all intents and purposes, often get invisibilized by our systems, like people who are houseless, or people who are using substances, or people who are going through chronic pain, and the way that Brittany's really reframing the way that she's showing up for those people.
Yeah, Brittany is really a special, amazing person. Episode four, Labor of Lusciousness.
Yes, so this was a
Yeah,
conversation with my really beloved colleague and friend who I get to learn from all the time, Jasmine Burnett.
oh yes, Jasmine.
Yes, and I loved how much of the conversation we talked about the importance of finding fun in our lives. So Jasmine is someone who provides a lot of mentorship and guidance to organizers in movement spaces, in movements that are looking at a lot of grief and a lot of trauma and a lot of again, failures of our systems. And so thinking about how we're taking care of ourselves and refilling our own cup to be able to come back to that work that can be awfully draining. I loved that that was the center of that conversation.
Okay, episode five, Seeds of Change.
Okay, this conversation with DJ Needleman knocked me on my ass. This was one of those episodes that I was like, today I'm going to talk to this awesome person about seeds. And then we talked about so much more than that in terms of seeing something all the way through, like what it means to see something to seed, right? Like nourishing something, not just to take away its fruit or its production, but instead taking it all the way through the cycle of reproduction and not just seeing something for its like westernized beauty ideals or like commodification. And their metaphor that they used throughout the conversation was just gorgeous in terms of like comparing even gender binary to the way that we think about plant life in our world. And so, I mean, kudos to DJ because this was one of those conversations that just blew me away.
It was like the you think you know, but you have no idea type of
Yeah, I was
vibe.
like, how deep can a conversation about seeds get? And then I was
Life.
like crying.
Okay. Episode six, Queering Housing Justice.
Yes. So this conversation was with Scout DeSimio, and they run a really important housing facility here in Kansas City called Pride Haven that's specifically for LGBTQ youth. And she discussed a lot of the ways that through her own work of being a social worker and now running this program, the ways that the nonprofit industrial complex and kind of the norms of nonprofits have been really stifling. And so I learned a lot in terms of like how to think about my own involvement with nonprofits, since that's where I've spent my career for the last 7 years, in ways that we can be just doing better, in showing up for workers of nonprofits, and really rethinking about the model in which of like why we're showing up for people and who we're showing up for and why.
Episode 7, Let's Fund Each Other. This was, I thought, a really interesting, great episode as well.
Yeah, so
They
this
all
was
are.
a
I'm like, this
this
specific one is better than all these. No, it's
This was a really wonderful conversation with Ash Williams. He is a Black trans abortion doula and abolitionist community organizer. And Ash is someone who I learned so much from in our friendship in the Twitterverse on online every day. And so, again, this was one of those where I was like, I feel like I know where this conversation's going to go. And then he really challenged me in our conversation to think about why it's easier for people to fund each other's abortions than to fund each other's bail. And the fact that people have made abortion a little bit more approachable, and maybe like a one-off issue as opposed to something that's deemed so like quote unquote shameful or wrong or criminal, like being involved in the prison industrial complex. And so I mean, again, my mind was just like really expanded in terms of thinking about how we talk about mutual aid and funding ourselves through a time when sometimes a few hundred dollars is all it takes to really change someone's life and like to really listen to people when they're asking for support.
okay, episode 8, Queering the Hand You're Dealt.
So in case you can't tell by the tone of Iman's naming this title, this was Iman's episode. And this was just such a huge joy,
Host, stop
sweetie.
explaining stuff like you're the
No, this
host.
really was just such a huge joy because I knew that this was going to be kind of a more meandering conversation because we have the comfort of knowing each other and trusting each other and knowing that kind of wherever the conversation goes, we're going to find our way through it. And I loved how much we got to dig into hearing your stories of the friendships that you found in queer media. That was something that was really touching to me. And I feel like we were doing some like live discovery about ways that you thought about queer media. And then I loved that you had a chance to share your platform about poker being socialist. Like
Ashley loved that too. She was like, I love your call to act
that
to play poker.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and it was just special to, I've been spending so much
Love for the
time
queers play
getting,
poker, y'all.
yeah, I was spending so much time getting this podcast together. And so it was very special to be able to kind of bring you into the fold and be a part of something that you've really just been listening to me babble about and curse at as I'm trying to learn how to edit podcast episodes.
Okay, episode 9, Queerness and Faith Holding Hands.
Yes, so this was our most recent episode with Sadia Omer. And again, I learned so much. I just didn't know how much I didn't know. And I think that that's one of like the coolest things about being human is to realize that there's just infinite, endless potential for learning. And I loved learning about the kind of good and bad moral binary or ethical binary that is built into Islam and how that shapes the way that as Sadia was growing up as a queer person and as a Black person really thought about good and bad or right and wrong and the way that they've been really trying to queer that over the course of their life and build community in a way that disrupts that. And I mean, I thought it was just such a beautiful reflection about the ways that faith is of course a way that people can feel isolated and lonely and maybe disconnected from their community, but at the same time, when queered and when thought about in a different way, it can really bring people together and help people find home.
Wow. And that brings us to this episode. What is your takeaway message for the listeners?
Oh man, I mean, I just feel super grateful for everyone that's been a part of this show, who's listened, who's provided suggestions for guests, who have been moral supports for me through this process and encouraged me to keep going. I mean, my takeaway message is there's always more. Like, there's never an end to the queer stories that are deserving of being heard and being told. And I cannot wait to keep learning from queer folks across the country, and the ways that they're queering justice and the way that they're showing up for their communities, especially right now when there's just such a need to hold each other. And so I just hope that y'all will continue with me on this ride as I explore what this show can look like and the ways that I can be better celebrating queer stories. And I'm hopeful that there's a lot more to come.
Okay, so that is great. And when can we expect the next season of Cool Queers Doing Bullshit?
I was not prepared to
Like
answer this
tomorrow
question.
or next week or 2025?
I think I'm
Usually.
going to take a break for the rest of the year, question mark.
Okay.
I
Because,
think
yeah,
I'll
you have some other things
probably,
to work on.
yeah, as I mentioned, I'm really trying to work on the very bizarre process of getting a book published, which has been scary and fun, and I mean, just really beautiful to explore, and all the people that I've met through that process. So, I think we will probably take a nice little pause for the rest of 2023 and kick us back off maybe in January of 2024. And that will give me a lot of time to hear from people about, identities of folks that they're wishing to hear more about, or, justice areas and services that people are providing that they want to tell stories of. And so I'm gonna definitely still be in conversation with people about what stories we should be telling and what stories people want to hear. And I look forward to also taking a little bit of a pause and a break and working on some other things.
Yeah, you deserve it. You've been working hard on this. And just so
Thank
everyone
you.
knows, that first episode in January 2024 will be from the outside of, we'll actually be outside eating brunch on New Year's Day in San Diego.
If we could only be so lucky,
Yeah, we'll probably be Dallas in Kansas City, like with the fireplace running 24/7. Hashtag don't tell Evergy.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to flip the script a little bit and interview me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure to interview you. I do it all the time, anyways.
One of your other hobbies.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you. And thanks everyone for listening.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. Thank you for all your support. Please keep sharing Cool Queers Doing Cool Shit with your community. Listen to the episodes you haven't had a chance to listen to yet. And please keep submitting suggestions for future guests on future seasons at coolqueersdoingcoolshit@gmail.com. Thank you for everyone who believed I could see this thing from ideation to creation. I love all y'all and especially love the support and motivation I get from this week's host, my big love, Iman. Okay, all you queers, take care, be well, and do something that makes you laugh today.